and then continued on with her briefing. "She did it again," Jared sent to Pauling on a private channel as the briefing continued. "You saw it, didn't you? How she was about to say no?"
"I saw it," Pauling said, "but she didn't. And when it comes down to it, she's always treated you just like she treats anyone."
"I know," Jared said. "I just wish I knew why she doesn't seem to like me."
"She doesn't really seem to like anyone all that much," Pauling said.
"Stop being paranoid.
Anyway, I like you, except when you're paranoid."
"I'll work on that," Jared said.
"Do," Pauling said. "And thank you for volunteering."
"Well, you know," Jared said. "Give the crowd what they want."
Pauling giggled audibly. Sagan shot her a look.
"Sorry,"
Pauling said, on a common channel.
After a few minutes, Jared hailed Pauling on a private channel. "Do you really think this mission is a bad one?"
"It fucking stinks," Pauling said.
The beams ceased, and Jared and the rest of the second popped their parafoils. Charged nanobots extended in tendrils from backpacks and formed individual gliders. Jared, no longer free-falling, tilted himself toward the palace and the smoking hole left by the third beam, a hole that led to the heir's nursery. At roughly the size of St. Peter's Basilica, the Hierarch's palace was no small edifice, and outside the main hall where the Hierarch held formal court and the now-shattered administrative wing, no non-Enishans were allowed to enter. There were no architectural plans of the palace in the public record, and the palace itself, constructed in the fluid and chaotically natural Enishan architectural style that resembled nothing so much as a series of termite mounds, did not lend itself to easy discovery of significant areas or rooms. Before the plan to kidnap the Enishan heir could be put into action, it had to be discovered where the heir's private chambers lay. Military research considered it a pretty puzzle, but one without a lot of time to be solved. Their solution was to think small. Indeed, to think single-celled, to think of C. Xavieri, an Enishan prokaryotic organism evolutionarily parallel to bacteria. Just as strains of bacteria live in happily symbiotic relationships with humans, so did C. Xavieri with Enishans, primarily internally, but also externally. Like many humans, not all Enishans were fastidious about their bathroom habits. Colonial Union military research cracked C. Xavieri open and resequenced it to create the subspecies C. Xavieri movere, which coded to construct mitochondrion-sized radio transmitters and receivers. These tiny organic machines recorded the movements of their hosts by polling their positions relative to C. Xavieri movere, housed by other Enishans within their transmitting range. The recording capacity of these microscopic devices was small. They had the capacity to store less than an hour's worth of movement, but each cellular division created a new recording machine, tracking movement anew. Military research introduced the genetically modified bug into the Hierarch's palace by way of a hand lotion provided to an unsuspecting Colonial Union diplomat who had regular physical contact with her Enishan counterparts. These Enishans then transmitted the germ to other members of the palace staff simply through everyday contact. The diplomat's personal brain prostheses and those of her entire staff were also surreptitiously modified to record the tiny transmissions that would soon emanate from the palace staff and all its inhabitants, including the Hierarch and her heir. In less than a month, military research had a complete map of the internal structure of the Hierarch's palace based on the movement of its staff. Military research never told the Colonial Union diplomatic staff of its unintentional espionage. Not only was it safer for the diplomats, but they would have been appalled at how they had been used. Jared reached the roof of the palace and dissolved his glider, landing away from the hole in case it collapsed. Other members of the second were landing or had landed and were preparing for their descent by securing rappelling lines. Jared spotted Sarah Pauling, who had walked up to the hole and was now peering down through the smoke and debris cloud.
"Don't look down," Jared said to her.
"Too late for that," she replied, and sent him a vertiginous image from her point of view.
Through their integration, Jared could sense her anxiety and anticipation. He felt that way himself. The rappelling lines were secure. "Pauling, Dirac,
said Jane Sagan. Time to move. It had been less than 5 minutes since the beams had torn down from the sky, and each additional second brought the increased chance that their quarry had been moved. They were also working against the eventual arrival of troops and emergency responders. Blowing up the executive wing would distract and delay attention to the second platoon, but not for long. The three clipped in and dropped down 4 levels, straight into the hierarch's residential apartments. The nursery was directly beyond. They had decided not to send the beam down directly on top of the nursery to avoid an accidental collapse. As Jared dropped, he sensed the wisdom of that decision. Surgical or not, the beam had made a mess of the 3 floors above the hierarch's apartments, and much of the damage had fallen straight down. "Activate your infrared," Sagan said, as they rappelled. "The lights are down, and there's a lot of dust down there." Jared and Pauling did as they were told. A glow suffused the air, heated by the exertions of the beam and the smoldering remains below. Residential guards assigned to the hierarch's apartments flowed into the chamber as the 3 rappelled down, battering through doors to get at the invaders. Jared, Sagan, and Pauling unclipped and dropped heavily into the debris pile below them, hastened by the Enisha's heavier gravity. Jared could feel the debris attempting to impale him as he struck it. His unitard stiffened to avoid that. The 3 swept the room visually and with infrared to locate the guards and sent the information upward. A few seconds later, there were several sharp cracks from the roof. The residential guards dropped. "You're clear," said Alex Rentgen. "The wing is sealed off and we're not seeing any more guards. More of us are coming down." As he said this, Julie Einstein and 2 other members of the second began their descent on the lines. The nursery adjoined the hierarch's private chamber, and for security purposes, the rooms were a single sealable unit, impenetrable to most violent attempts at entry, save massively powerful particle beams shot down from space. Because the 2 rooms were assumed to be externally secure, the internal security between the rooms was light. A gorgeously carved but single-bolted door was the nursery's only security from the hierarch's chamber. Jared shot the lock and entered the room as Pauling and Sagan covered him. Something hurtled toward Jared as he checked his corners. He ducked and rolled, and looked up to find an Enishon attempting to bring an improvised club crashing down on his head. Jared blocked the hit with his arm and kicked upward, connecting with the Enishon between its forward lower limbs. The Enishon roared as the kick cracked its carapace. In his peripheral vision, Jared registered a second Enishon in the room, huddled in the corner and holding something that was screaming. The first Enishon lunged again, bellowing, and then stopped bellowing but kept lunging, collapsing in a pile on top of Jared. After the Enishon lay on top of him, Jared realized that somewhere in there he had heard a burst of gunfire. He looked around the body of the Enishon and saw Sarah Pauling behind it, reaching over to grab the Enishon's mantle to pull the corpse off Jared.
"You could have tried killing it when it wasn't moving toward me," Jared said.
"Complain again and I'll leave you underneath the damn thing," Pauling said. "Also, if you wouldn't mind pushing, we'll get it off you quicker."
Pauling pulled and Jared pushed, and the Enishon rolled to the side. Jared crawled out and got a good look at his attacker.
"Is it him?" Pauling asked.
"I can't tell," Jared said. "They kind of all look alike."
"Move," Pauling said,
and came in close to get a look at the Enishon. She accessed her mission briefing.
"It's him," she said. "It's the father. It's the Hierarch's consort."
Jared nodded. Jean Hio, the Hierarch's consort, chosen for political reasons to sire the heir. The matriarchal traditions of the Enishon royalty dictated that the father of the heir was directly responsible for the heir's pre-metamorphic care. Tradition also dictated the father would stay awake at the side of the heir after her consecration ceremony for 3 Enishon days, to symbolize the acceptance of his paternal duties. This, among other reasons related to the consecration ceremony, was why the kidnapping was planned when it was. Jean Hio's assassination was a secondary but critical part of the mission.
"He died for protecting his child," Jared said.
"It's how he died," Pauling said. "It's not why he died."
"I don't think the distinction matters much to him," Jared said.
"This mission stinks," Pauling agreed.
A burp of gunfire erupted from the corner of the room. The screaming that had been constant in the room since their entrance stopped briefly and then started up again even more urgently. Sagan came out of the corner, MP in one hand, a wriggling white mass secured in the other against the crook of her arm. The second Enishon slumped where Sagan shot it. "The nanny," Sagan said. "She wouldn't give me the air."
"You asked?" Pauling said.
"I did," Sagan said, pointing to the small translation speaker she had clipped onto her belt. "It would have use later in the mission."
"I tried, anyway."
"Our killing the consort probably didn't help," Jared said. The screaming thing in Sagan's arm twisted mightily and nearly got out of her grip. Sagan dropped her MP to get a better grip on it. It screamed ever louder as she squeezed it securely between her arm and body. Jared peered intently to look at it.
"So that's the air," Jared said.
"This is it," Sagan said.
"She, actually, pre-metamorphic Enishon, like a big screaming maggot."
"Can we sedate her?" Pauling asked. "She's pretty loud."
"No," Sagan said. "We need the Hierarch to see that she's still alive."
The air wriggled again. Sagan began to stroke it with her free hand in an attempt to soothe it.
"Get my MP for me, Dirac," she said.
Jared bent down to retrieve the rifle. The lights went on.
"Oh, shit," Sagan said. "Power's back."
"I thought we blasted the backup generator," Jared said.
"We did," Sagan said. "Looks like there was more than one. Time to go."
The three backed out of the nursery, Sagan with the air, Jared with his MP, and Sagan's up and ready. In the main apartment, two members of the platoon were shimmying up the ropes. Julie Einstein had positioned herself to cover the two doors into the apartment.
"They're going to cover the two levels above us," Einstein said. "The hole goes through rooms on those levels with only one entrance to them. At least that's what the floor plan says. Top level is wide open now."
"Transport on its way," Alex Rentgen said. "We've been spotted up here and we're starting to take fire."
"We need people to cover us coming up," Sagan said, "and to lay down suppressing fire on the first level. It's open. That's where they're going to come through."
"On it," Rentgen said.
Sagan handed the air to Pauling, unslung her equipment pack, and pulled out a shoulder sling with a pouch sized to accommodate the air. She stuffed the squalling air into the pouch with some difficulty, secured it, and placed the sling across her body with the strap over her right shoulder.
"I'm center line," Sagan said. "Dirac, you're left. Pauling, right. Einstein will cover us as we climb, and then you two cover her and the other two from the top as they get out. Clear?"
"Clear,"
Jared and Pauling said.
"Reload my MP and give it to Einstein," Sagan said to Jared. "She won't have time to reload."
Jared cleared the magazine from Sagan's MP, reloaded it with one of his spares, and handed it to Einstein. She took it and nodded.
"We're ready for you," Rentgen said from above. "You better hurry."
As they went to their lines, they heard the sound of heavy Enishon footfalls. Einstein began firing as they started to climb. At each of the next two levels, Jared's platoon mates were calmly waiting, sighted in on their sole entrances. Jared's integration told them they were both scared shitless and waiting for the shoe to drop. From above Jared, new firing began. The Enishons had come through on the top level. Sagan was weighed down by the air, but lacking her MP or her equipment pack. On balance, she was traveling light and flew up her line ahead of Jared and Pauling. The pair of bullets that stitched across her shoulder hit her as she was within reach of the top and grasping for the hand of Julian Lowell to pull her up. A third bullet slipped past Sagan's shoulder and struck Lowell directly above his right eye, passing through his brain before ricocheting off the inside of his skull and burying itself in his neck, severing his carotid in the process. Lowell's head snapped back and then forward, his body slumping and falling forward into the hole. He collided with Sagan as he fell, tearing the final scrap of fabric that kept intact the sling holding the air. Sagan felt the tear and the sling falling away, but was too occupied trying to keep herself from falling to do anything about it.
"Catch it," she said,
and was grabbed by Alex Rentgen and pulled to safety. Jared grabbed and missed. It was too far away. The sling rippled past Pauling, who snatched it as it fell and then swung as it described an arc around her. From below, Jared sensed a surprised shock of pain from Julie Einstein. Her MP went silent. The rustling sound that followed was the sound of Enishans climbing into the Hierarch's chambers. Pauling looked up at Jared.
"Climb," she said.
Jared climbed without looking down. As he passed the upper level of the palace, he glimpsed the bodies of a score of dead Enishans and more live Enishans behind them firing at Jared as he climbed, while Jared's platoon mates fired back with bullets and grenades. Then he was beyond them, pulled up by an unseen platoon mate onto the roof of the palace. He turned back to see Sarah Pauling on her line, sling in hand, Enishans below her aiming upward at her. Holding the sling, she could not climb.